Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. One of the messages we are sending unconsciously through our body posture, facial and hand gestures, and the tone of our voice. Vanessa Van Edwards is a human behavioral lead investigator at The Science of People, which offers science-based coaching and training for entrepreneurs, CEOs, and other communicators who want their physical cues and their vocal cues to match their verbal messages. Edwards draws on hundreds of studies and her own work to decode over 40 social cues into four categories: nonverbal, vocal, verbal, and imagery. With charts and exercises, her latest book offers tips to shine in the business place when trying to persuade or just simply being open to others and loved ones. Her book, Cues, Master the Secret Language of Charismatic Communication, also offers insights into that ineffable quality of charisma, as well as cues to let others know you are engaged and listening, or to be engaging and persuasive when speaking. Vanessa Van Edwards is the author of the bestseller Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People. She's been featured in viral YouTube and TEDx talks and leads corporate workshops for large companies, NGOs, entrepreneurs, and international organizations. She's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Vanessa Edwards, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
We've all experienced seeing someone, a speaker, deliver a message with body language that seems to belie the message or take our attention away from the message being delivered. A lot of times we still try to understand the message despite that body language, but how much is that, those unspoken cues, giving away, and how much is it affecting our ability to hear the message and to take it to heart?
Yes. You know, a surprising amount of our communication is in delivery. You know, we tend to think about our communication as verbal, right? The words we use, we script the perfect presentation, we think of the perfect answer in a date or in an interview. But actually what research finds is about 65 to 90% of our communication is nonverbal. So that's our body language, our facial expressions, our posture, our gestures. And then another part of our communication, this is the forgotten aspect of delivery, is our vocal power. So our intonation, our volume, our pace, our cadence, the pauses that we use. And the very last one, the small one, is our ornaments, our imagery. So the colors we wear, the fonts we use, the props in our pictures and our Zoom background, all of those make up our delivery style.
How much, I know you've done a lot of research on this, how much can that affect a message as it's delivered? Completely? Mostly? What?
I want to do a demo. We can see. So if I were to come on the interview and I were to say, yeah, I'm so happy to be here, you would hear the verbal, right? I said, I'm so happy to be here. But based on, you can't even see my facial expression, just based on the sighing and the tone, you don't believe the words. So what I like to think about is our tone, our gestures, our nonverbal, it adds more weight. We tend to believe some of those cues more than the verbal cues. And that's because as humans, we're very savvy. It's pretty easy to change our words, right? I can say, someone can ask me, so what do you think of the new girl? And I can say, she seems nice. And you know, wait a minute, something does not seem so nice. And you go, oh, really? What do you really think about her? So I share that example because I think if you can have the best words, but if you don't have the right delivery, there's no way that they're going to land.
At the very beginning of your book, Cues, you tell the story of the founder of Ring appearing on Shark Tank. Yes. In the mid-20-teens. He has this idea for a doorbell where you can see the person at the door. You can interact with them without opening the door. And this is a perfect example of what you're talking about, cues. Tell us this story and how he basically flunked his shark test on what was an amazing, billion-dollar idea, probably.
Yes. Okay, so this pitch shocked me because here's some of the funny background behind this pitch. So this is Jamie Siminoff. As you just mentioned, he is the founder of Ring, a brilliant idea, and Ring is now on millions of doors around the world. So he had this great idea. strong business plan, great numbers. He had really good verbally scripted answers. But he walks into the tank and he completely bombs this pitch. What's crazy is that a few months later, he got investments from Shaq, from Richard Branson, and then eventually his company was acquired for $1 billion, I think actually even more than that with a B, by Amazon. So the idea was amazing. But the problem is he went in, and this is the problem of smart people. Really smart, brilliant, talented people rely too much on their ideas. They think my ideas, my smarts are so good they can stand alone. And that is exactly the trap that Siminoff went into. So he made a critical mistake first. So if you watch Shark Tank, it's a pretty simple premise. I'm totally addicted to the show. It's entrepreneurs walk into a Shark Tank and they pitch a panel of investors called sharks. So Siminoff made a critical mistake. He walked into the tank and he decided to have the doors closed so he could knock on the door, because he wanted to demonstrate that you can't see who's behind the door. And the very first thing he said was, "It's Jamie here to pitch." Now, we talked about intonation, right? So the question inflection is a very interesting cue. It's one of the first cues that I began to add when I was cataloging all these cues. The question inflection is when we go up at the end of our sentences. So I say, "Hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm here to talk about cues. I'm happy to be here." Now, people who use up talk or the question inflection, our brains don't like it, because what research has found is that when we hear the question inflection accidentally used on a statement, we begin to question the listener. We know, wait a minute, why are they asking that statement? And that is because liars typically ask their lies. Liars know they're not telling the truth. And so they'll ask their lie as if to say, "Do you believe me?" So when Siminoff, his very first two lines are question inflections, his own name, and that he was here to pitch, it gave away all his vocal power. And the entire pitch was plagued by doubt. They doubted his numbers. They doubted his idea. They doubted his business plan. And that is because that first impression, our vocal impression or our nonverbal impression, is critical to the impression we make on others.
Now, the sharks were questioning his statements about the value because they had this uncertainty over whether they were believing him. At the same time, Jamie was also misreading the shark's nonverbal yes. cues as well. Yes. How common is that among people that, you know, you just don't pick up on those cues? Is it half the population, a quarter of the population?
I would say that, and I wish I had a specific number for you. Here's the problem. I think that most of us, we are blind to the cues that are being sent to us because we're focused so much on the verbal and we're focused so much on what we want to say. So we often miss these decoded signals. One that Jamie missed was right when he was going over his valuation, Mark Cuban, one of the sharks, did what's called a mouth shrug. So a mouth shrug, if you want to try this with me, this is when you turn your mouth into an upside down U. So you pull the corners of your mouth down and make a little U. I'm actually doing it right now. I don't even know if you can hear it in my voice. So a mouth shrug is a really interesting little cue because it upverts the mouth. And if you do this, I'm going to do it right now. And it's really hard to talk when you're doing this. It's literally like physically impossible to talk. And that is because when we do this mouth shrug, it's a dismissive cue. It means, "I don't think so. I don't believe this. I have a little bit of doubt. I have nothing further to say on this," because literally you're upverting your mouth. A lot of times this is a completely subconscious cue. I don't even know if Mark Cuban realized he was doing it. Siminoff missed that cue. So he's in the middle of his pitch. And again, this is another problem that very prepared people make, is they have this agenda. They have this presentation, they have something they want to say or get out, and they barrel through their story or they barrel through their presentation and they miss a seed of disbelief. Now, the best thing that Siminoff could have done in that moment is paused, looked right at Mark and said, "Does this all make sense? Do you have any questions for me?" Or if he had just talked about, let's say, competitive advantage, he could have noticed that mouth shrug on Mark and said, "Oh, I think I lost him." And given a couple more examples or a couple more data points to show, "I really do know what I'm talking about." Masterful communicators, what their superpower is they're not only sending the right cues, they're looking for feedback cues as they speak. They're looking at people's faces, they're listening for tones, and then they can dynamically address those cues. I think that is our biggest opportunity because it's so easy to spot these cues once you know what to look for.
Let me ask you a question about that. If you're getting cues that suggest that your message is not being received or it's being doubted, is it good to say, well, I see you're uncertain about this. What can I do to help you understand that this is a great idea? Is that a good strategy of actually commenting on the feedback they're giving you non-verbally?
I love that strategy. So you have two choices, right? So if you're brave and you're confident and you want to be radically transparent, I love what you just said. So, you know, you seem upset, you seem confused. Can I help explain this? That's one. You directly address what you see. And by the way, you know, everyone in my life, they know cues, right? I either taught them to them or I've shown them cues. And so we have a shared language in our family even, right? So even with my partner, even with my daughter, I'm teaching her cues. I can say, you're looking angry. What's wrong? Are you frustrated? So I can actually say that to my four-year-old. So I highly recommend use the language, like make it a shared language. If you're someone where you don't feel comfortable, quote unquote, calling them out, and you never want to put someone on the spot, you can simply say, are we all good? Does this make sense? Anything I can further explain? Or just giving more data, giving another story, giving another example. I think of this as a sign of nonverbal respect. You're basically saying to someone, I want you to be on the same page with me so much that I'm not only listening to you, I'm watching you, I'm responding to you. And so I think of this as like an elevated level of communication. You're actually being the most empathetic and compassionate when you're accurately spotting and then responding to these cues.
My guest today is Vanessa Van Edwards, a human behavioral investigator with the Science of People. It's an independent lab that does human behavioral studies. She writes for an Entrepreneur and Huffington Post. And is the author of a couple of books that are latest is titled Cues, Master the Secret Language of Charismatic Communication. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Will you spend some time talking about charisma? And charisma is one of those things that it's as to paraphrase Justice Potter Stewart, you know it when you see it, but it's hard to define. And actually, you have come up with a pretty good definition of what charisma is. What is the components of charisma?
You know, that is so correct because I'm a recovering awkward person. You know, I like to joke that social skills never came naturally to me. And so I always thought that charisma was an innate trait. You were either born with it or you weren't. And luckily, thank goodness for our discussion, research has found that charisma can be cultivated. It can be learned. And when we look at the definition of charisma here, it's very hard to define charisma, but this research looked at highly charismatic people, people that we're drawn to. And this is, by the way, in both professional, social, and romantic settings. They found that highly charismatic people have a very specific blend of two traits. These two traits are critical for how we're drawn to people. They are warmth and competence. Highly charismatic people, when you are with them, when you're listening to them, they are at the very same time sending off cues of warmth, openness, collaboration, trust, but at the same time sending off signals of competence. This is capability, productivity, efficiency, and power. And we love people where they're telling us, I'm friendly and likable, but you can also rely on me. That is that magic sweet spot of charisma.
Yeah, and charisma, a lot of times, you know, when you look at those two traits, we tend to dominate in one rather than the other. We may be a very warm person, but our competencies are not as strong. Very incredibly competent people are oftentimes lacking in warmth. And you say that really the best charismatic leaders craft their message depending on who they're talking with. They can go to warmth. They can go to competency. Depending on the situation.
You hit the nail on the head with this is, I think, the cause of so many of our miscommunications, of our people problems, of why we just can't click with certain people is most of us have an imbalance. So most of us lean a little higher in warmth or competence. So see which one sounds more like you. So for anyone who's listening, if you're higher in warmth, you tend to be the cheerleader. You tend to support people. You're very good at collaboration. People love opening up to you. You can get anyone to talk to you. Typically, people who are high in warmth, being liked matters a lot to them. So they can sometimes be people pleasers, right? Because being liked is incredibly important. The problem is if you are high in warmth without enough of those competence cues, and you can be very competent, but if you're not sending off the right cues, people don't take you seriously. People interrupt you. People forget having met you before. On the other side, you have people who have an imbalance in competence. So they're off the charts in competence, which means people take you very seriously. People think of you as impressive and powerful. High competent people always think you're in charge. The problem is if you're too high in competence without enough warmth cues, people see you as cold, intimidating, hard to talk to. And so this is the reason why we might be in the office or be in a meeting or be in an interaction and we're not feeling like we're clicking. And it's because there could be an imbalance. Highly charismatic people can match or mirror the people they're with. And we see this with really charismatic people who are interviewers, who are great hosts. If they're with someone who's high in competence, they dial up their competence. If there was someone who's high in warmth, they dial up their warmth. It's all about being in control of our cues. And I think that that's how charismatic people are able to take control of so many of their interactions.
You also wrote very briefly about the idea that sometimes when you have a highly competent leader who does exude that notion of coldness, of all business, of let's get to the point, let's move on, that oftentimes the really successful leaders will be paired with somebody who's high in warmth, and they sort of create this team that makes their leadership incredibly powerful.
Yes, dynamic duos. So you have a choice, right? If you want to try to balance your cues yourself, you can do that, right? So you can try to balance your own warmth and competence cues, or if you know you have an imbalance, you can find a really great partner. And this is in great marriages, in great business partnerships. You know, some funny ones I talk about in the book are Bert and Ernie is a classic example of warmth and competence, a warm and competent character. A business leader would be Steve Jobs and Wozniak, right? Jobs was known for being very high in competence, and he partnered with Wozniak, who was known for a little bit more higher in warmth. So you see this play out in so many areas, even in TV hosts, you'll notice there's typically someone who's a little higher in warmth and who plays the nice guy. There's someone higher as incompetent who asks the hard-hitting questions. We're constantly looking for that balance. So you can balance yourself out either by balancing your cues or having a wingman or a wingwoman or a partner who also balances you out.
Well, let's talk a little about some of the cues that you write about. First is about the nonverbal cues you're sending off when you're entering a conversation or when you're in a meeting. One of the most important ones is letting people know that they have your attention. And there's a few very simple techniques that you describe that lets people know that we're having this encounter. I'm hearing you. Hopefully you're hearing me. And they're very important for making that communication work. Can you maybe describe a couple of those?
Yeah, here are my favorites. If you want to show easy ways to show that you are engaged with someone, that you are with them. So the very first one is a universal sign of engagement is a head tilt. Very simple. So a head tilt, if I were to say, do you hear that? We tilt our head over to one side and expose our ear. That's a universal response for humans. I think also dogs do this as well when they're trying to hear something. And so when we're trying to hear something better, we literally tilt our head and expose our ear. This is an immediate warming cue. So if you're with someone and you want to show that you're listening, you want to encourage them to open up, that will immediately add warmth, especially if you've ever been told that you're hard to talk to or cold. I would highly recommend on video calls, in person, using a slight head tilt as you're listening. The next warmth cue. So let's say you have the head tilt, you want to try something else. Another really great warmth engagement cue is a triple nod. So this is a very slow 1, 2, 3 triple nod. Research has found that when you do that slow triple nod, other people are more likely to speak longer. And that is because a slow triple nod is literally broadcasting, please keep going. It's like a nonverbal dot, dot, dot. It's like, yes, I'm listening. I'm with you. Just be careful with this one. So it's three and it's slow. If you do too many, it's a bobblehead, right? No one likes a bobblehead, right? That's too much nodding. And it's also not a fast nod. So a fast nod signals impatience. So if you try this, if you do a one, two, three, that's very warm, very engaging. But now try a faster one, one, two, three. It's like, yeah, yeah, I get it. I get it. I hear you. So even those subtle differences make a big difference in how people respond to you.
Even something as small as an eyebrow lift can.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's a sign that you're telling me something I need to know. I agree with you. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So the eyebrow raise is a great one because it can be used for both decoding and encoding. So when we talk about cues, there are two different ways we think about them. There's decoding. So that's spotting a cue and liking what you see. So if I were to see you eyebrow raise, that's a universal signal of I want to see you so much. I'm literally getting my eyebrows out of the way. So an eyebrow raise, universally, we know that as a sign of interest. And so if I see or decode eyebrow raise, I'm like, oh, great, he's interested. You can also encode this cue. So encoding are the social signals we send to others. So if you want to show someone, I agree with you, I am listening, what a great point, please keep going, you can also eyebrow raise for them. So it's a beautiful kind of double-sided cue that you'll notice really great speakers even do that from stage, even do that from the front of the room. Even hosts will do this when they're speaking direct to camera. But when they get to their most important point, when they're trying to emphasize something in their own speech, they will raise their eyebrows as if to say, this is a good one. Listen to what I'm saying. And so you'll start to see that eyebrow raises are used as sort of nonverbal highlights. It's a way to highlight our words.
What about negative cues? Everyone knows blocking, you know, the idea that the arms folded basically says, you know, I'm putting distance between you. You often write about when we're doing presentations, that podium serves the same function. But what are some of the other negative cues?
Yes. So negative cues are incredibly important because these are the ones that we often use accidentally. We don't realize that we're sending these cues. I call them danger zone cues because typically they're cues that liars use or people who are in fear and guilt and shame. So some of the research we did in our lab is we had people submit videos of themselves lying. Now, this was a really fun experiment. It's great to watch and code all these videos of liars. We had them play two truths and a lie with us, right? So they say two truths and a lie about themselves. Then we coded the difference between the truth statements and the lie statements just to see if there were any common cues that the liars used. And these danger zone cues are very specific. And that is because they leak insecurity or anxiousness or guilt. So you mentioned one. So blocking when we try to protect our body. So this could be an arm block. So it could be crossing your arms, but it could also be clutching a book to your chest, hugging a purse in front of you. Sudden blocking behavior is what you want to look out for. And that is because if someone's sitting with their arms crossed, it might just be comfortable for them. That might be their default way of sitting. But if you're talking to someone and you get to a particularly intense part of the conversation and then suddenly they cross their arms and lean back, those are two sudden blocking and then distancing behaviors. Another one that I like to look out for, and you can see this on video too, now that we're doing more and more video calls, is a lip purse. So this was the cue actually that kicked off a lot of my research, which was in 2005, Lance Armstrong went on Larry King Live and lied. He said that he wasn't doping. And of course it came out later that he had had a large undercover doping scheme. And in this interview, I remember distinctly watching it right after he told a massive lie. He lip pursed, he pressed his lips together into a firm, hard line. Now, if you try this, so just mash your lips together. This is a universal cue for withholding. It's as if your body instinctively thinks, hold it in. And that's because we know that lies get us into trouble. Or I think Lance Armstrong was thinking, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say too much, don't get yourself into trouble. So a lip purse is something I want you to watch out for. If you suddenly see that someone presses their lips together into a hard line, that is a withholding cue. And that's a good opportunity to say, you know, anything else I should know? Anything else that you're not telling me? Or go into more specific questions. It's a signal that there might be something good or bad that's being held back.
We don't have a whole lot of time left. I want to end with one other little experiment you did on how important these blocking techniques are. You had a marketing person that had a series of ads, and he had his arms folded across his chest. And you said, why don't you create a more open position? What happened when he changed the ad to that?
It is incredible. As soon as any of the participants opened up their body, they became more receptive. They spoke in longer sentences. They even became more creative. And they repeated this experiment in many different ways, that closed body signals closed mind. That when we are sitting in a closed body position, we actually think in a more closed-minded way. So if you're trying to get someone to open up, if you want someone to be collaborative and creative, you not only want to show open body, you want to encourage open body, that there's a loop between our body and our mind.
Well, the book Cues goes into all sorts of cues that we are hearing, we give off, from vocal to actual verbal cues to the imagery we use. And this is the imagery side that's really interesting. From the clothes we wear, how big a difference does the imagery we have, the fonts we use in a presentation, I guess a lot of people probably don't put a lot of thought into it. How important is that to getting your message across?
So what's really interesting is these imagery cues are affecting so much of people's perception of us. You know, if I were to have a LinkedIn profile picture with a red dress, that would say something very different than a blue dress. And even though this is totally subconscious, colors, fonts, and props really affect people's perception of us, especially if they're standout. So one thing that you can think about is, what are the visual cues that you're sending in your profile pictures? Are you holding a prop like a dog? Are you in a business suit or something more casual? What kind of color signals are you showing off? Is it a simple black where it doesn't stand out? Or are you trying to make a statement with red or blue or yellow or orange? All of those cues, none of them are right or wrong, but they are sending off signals. And I don't want people to be accidental. I want everyone to be purposeful with the cues they're sending, so you're setting yourself up for success.
The name of the book is Cues: Master the Secret Language of Charismatic Communication. Vanessa, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Vanessa Van Edwards is the lead investigator at the Science of People. Her book is titled Cues: Master the Secret Language of Charismatic Communication. It's published by Penguin. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.